This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 20, Episode 23. This is Writing Excuses.
The Lens of the Senses.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Stinky.
And we all have a regret. So we've been talking about the various lenses you can use to approach how you're doing your world building, how you're building your fiction, how you're just constructing your story in general, right? We've been talking about context and time, but I wanted to bring us back down into the body a little bit today. And what is the most rooting thing you can do in a scene often is to remind your readers of the sensory details of a scene. What do they see? What do they hear? What do they taste? What do they smell? What do they feel? Those are the five senses. I believe I hit all of them.
What do they taste?
What do they taste? Did I miss that one? Anyways, as we're going through these, or as we're talking about how to make your world feel really lived in, what are the sensory details that you guys reach for in a scene automatically, or what are the ones that you find are the ones you have to remind yourself to include?
I reach for acoustics very, very quickly, because as an audio engineer, one of the first things that I would do walking into a space is stop, close my eyes, and listen to the room. Not just listening for things that are making noise in the room, but then I'd also, you know, snap my fingers or click my tongue and listen for the T60, the time in which an echo will drop by 60 decibels. You know, how long does it take for the echo to die away completely? And I realized fairly early on that with my eyes closed, I could tell without making any noise if I was in a little room or a big room or a giant room or outdoors. Mm-hmm. And it's such a fun exercise to do.
It's interesting that you say this because my husband is also an audio engineer, film and television. He did location sound. In college, I was an art major. I am very visually oriented and tactile orientation. So we walk into the same space and he will be absolutely driven bonkers by a buzzing sound that I don't even know exists until he points it out. And I will talk about the pattern in a carpet that's just like, why would anyone do this? It gives people vertigo. And he is like, there's carpet in the room? And this is, I think, one of the reasons that it is such a powerful tool, because it's telling you not only about the world, but also about the character. So I tend to default to visual, and I think a lot of writers do. As a result of that, I will sometimes make a conscious decision that one of my character's primary sense is something other than sight. So to differentiate them, I try to link it to usually something about the career that they've wound up in, not because the career shapes it so much, but because I think that you get drawn to a career based on what is important to you. But I can reverse engineer that to create some character distinction.
What's interesting hearing that is that I have aphantasia, so I cannot make mental images at all. And I have a horrible sense of smell. And those are my two favorite senses to use when I'm writing.
Interesting.
Actually, I don't know if it's because I am with visual, I actually am trying to make it happen. And so something that I will do is I will actually pull up images of the place or something like the place I'm writing about so that I can actually look for what are the visual things that like would be happening. And I just love smell because I feel like it's so visceral, even though I don't experience it as much as other people, maybe. I just love what it says about the way you experience something. I feel like it's the thing that's the hardest to get away from. Like if something smells bad, it also will have like a taste effect on you. And so I think it's an interesting one because it kind of has like an interesting secondary effect. But I think part of the reason is because they aren't things that I'm experiencing as much. I'm able to think about the way that the character experiences them in a completely different way. And I'm not distracted by my own senses in coming up with the character's sensory experience.
Interesting. it lets you put yourself in the fictional space more because they're things that aren't deeply connected to
exactly
how you experience the world.
Yeah.
What's also really interesting about this is each of the senses are tied to memory and experience in different ways. What we see versus what we smell versus what we hear, I think, are all different cues for different people into memory. There's a lot of research that scent is the most strongly connected to memory for a lot of people, maybe less so for you, Aaron. But, you know, that the scent memory of something, and I know for myself, sometimes I'll smell a particular smell and I'll suddenly just, you know, be back in, you know, when I was 13 years old in this particular space, in this particular summer, whatever it was. And so I think, are there things that you guys not only are connecting in terms of what's interesting for the character, but if you're trying to evoke certain emotions, do you lean towards different sensory details, or do you find that it's more just what tool fits what character in it?
I often, when I'm trying to evoke a specific emotion, the one that I lean towards is touch, because mm-hmm. I lean into what the body is feeling, mm-hmm. Where the character is feeling their tension, you know, if they're too hot, if they're too cold. Those are the things for me when I'm trying to create emotion that I tend to lean towards, which is linked to but somewhat different than trying to create a sense of place.
Right.
I do feel like scent, the sense of smell, it's almost like when we remember things, smell ends up as the index tabs, mm-hmm. Whereas other things, you know, sounds and colors don't. But I don't do that to try and, I don't include smell to try and, make the reader smell something, or, you know, I'm not trying to flip through their index tabs. What I'm trying to do is let them look into the character's brain by giving a scent and have the character immediately smell, oh, it smells like grandma's place. Mothballs. I'm smelling mothballs. Mm-hmm. If anybody's had that experience, and I think most of us have, where you've smelled a thing and immediately been in a place or had a thought, that is normalizing. That draws us into the character and gives us the reader a sense that we've experienced the same thing the character's experiencing.
One of the things that I will hear people talk about sometimes is that they, yes, they agree with that, but that they don't use smell as much as they would use sight because there's not as much language for it. Mm-hmm. However, after my husband left doing the audio engineering, he went and became a winemaker, which, you know, sometimes I have to help him with his research, and that's very difficult.
Oh,
on
no.
What a struggle.
Sadness. But it means that I wind up going to these winemaking events, and they have so many ways to talk about scent. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was struck by was that actually it's the same toolbox that we have for talking about sight. We're just not used to using it. Like when you talk about a color being creamy, that's an analogy, right?
Yeah.
And that's the same thing that happens when you're talking about scent. It smells chocolatey. It doesn't smell like chocolate, but there's that richness of flavor. Mm-hmm. And this, you can build the sense of something that is not a flavor or a scent that occurs in the real world by linking it to things. Like I just wrote a story where there was something called a basil lily.
Oh, interesting.
And because people are actually really crap at naming things, we just name it by what we... Uh-huh. But then I was sitting there trying to describe basil. I just had a recent experience where I have a friend who has the unfortunate gene where cilantro tastes like soap. Mm-hmm. And she's like, but what does it taste like to you? And attempting to link it to things that I know that she has smelled and tasted, it's like, oh yeah, this is all analogy. One of the things that my husband says when people are learning to approach wine is, if it smells like that to you, you're correct. And if the way you need to describe it is, it reminds me of grandma, mm-hmm. Then someone else can sit there and say, oh, knowing me, oh, your grandmother's Southern and you are picking up these bacon notes and mm-hmm. these vegetal things. Grandma's baked green beans are amazing. Now I'm hungry.
Now I want bacon wine.
I can introduce you.
I really want to talk more about the language that we use to describe sensory details. But before that, let's take a quick break.
Between drafting your new novel, building your lore bible, or meeting with your critique group, who has time to stress about website security? As a writer, your website is your digital face to the world that lets people know about your work and where they can find it. Securing your website means less stress about anyone disrupting that important outlet. Kinsta offers managed hosting for WordPress with lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7 human-only customer support. They're available in multiple languages and ready to assist regardless of site complexity. It's complete peace of mind knowing your WordPress site is always secure, online, and performing at its best. Kinsta provides enterprise-grade security and is one of the few hosting providers for WordPress with SOC 2 and other certifications that guarantee the highest level security for your website. And Kinsta customers can experience up to 200% faster sites by simply moving their WordPress sites to the platform. They even have user-friendly custom dashboard called My Kinsta that makes managing your site or multiple sites a breeze. And if you're moving from another host, they offer unlimited expert-led migrations to ensure a smooth transition so you won't experience any downtime. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at Kinsta.com today. It's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their websites. Visit Kinsta.com to get this limited-time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out. Get started for free today.
Plan on flying? In order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID. Learn how to get your real ID today at tsa.gov/real ID or visit your local DMV.
The thing of the week is an experience that I think is actually going to be hard for you to find. It's called Darkfield. It is a touring show and you go, they have containers that they have turned into a theater and you go into the container and are in a completely dark space. This is actually something that is not commonly experienced because most of the time there's a little bit of an LED, there's the exit light, completely dark space, and they tell you a story through sound and motion. It is wild. They have a couple of different experiences, flight, seance, and coma. As a storyteller, thinking about how you can tell a story with only a few senses and removing others highlights exactly where we get our information. It's very compelling. It's a little disturbing and it is a touring show, so it may be hard for you to find, but if you can, I recommend seeing Darkfield.
I started this episode by talking about how sensory details can be the most grounding. But Mary Robinette, before the break, you were talking about ways in which actually that sensory experience is so subjective.
Mm-hmm.
What I experience is very different from what you experience, very different from Aaron experience and Howard experiences, right? What tastes one way to us, even if we all like the same thing, my experience of eating cilantro is different from yours because I'm a different person. I have mm-hmm. a different physics, biology, all those things. So when you're trying to use language to make an experience feel universal, make someone feel in the body of this character, but you don't know what kind of body your reader has, what are the tricks that we can use to make sensory experience feel universal or feel connected or feel specific in different ways?
So it's funny because hearing y'all talk earlier about like scent being the core of memory, I think because of a lack of both scent and visuals, like I actually have a quite poor memory. And the only way that I remember things is by feeling like there's a story about it, almost as if somebody was mm-hmm. singing a song and suddenly you remember the chorus. And so like, that's how my whole life is stories. But one of the things that I do then, because I am trying to like convey sense to, or something to a reader that I don't have, is I often make up what a scent is by trying to create an emotional moment and then mm-hmm. telling you there's a scent to it. So I would say, you know, this smells like a combination of, and a lot of times I'll use a very sensory thing and a fake thing sort of. So I'll be like, this smells like rotten meat and sidewalk chalk the day after a rain.
Mm. Yeah. And as a humorist, I am always, always playing with the words around smell mm-hmm. because it's so much fun. You know, this smells like something died and then went to gym class without taking a shower. That's a ridiculous metaphor. But, and what we know is that the character has passed judgment on, maybe it's body odor, maybe it's putrescine, maybe it's both. But we are having, hopefully, you know, a humorous emotional response to what the character is experiencing.
The thing that Aaron was saying, I'm just taking that and tying back in, you make me think about the way parfumiers describe perfume, that they're trying to create an experience that takes you through something. So mm-hmm. even though you're saying, you know, an imaginary thing, it's like, yeah, it's imaginary, but there's a whole layer of scents that are associated with each of those things mm-hmm. that builds this whole in a way that a list would not. It smells like petrichor, sidewalk chalk, and exhaust from streets. It's like, that's a very different thing than the smell of sidewalk chalk after rain.
And the thing is, if you say, like, I can think of a lot of reasons why I think, like, that scent makes sense. Like, things like rain do have their own scent. You know, a sidewalk after the rain has a certain scent. Chalk has a scent. But I also think that it's very possible that if we had, like, smell-o-vision, or, like, I could suddenly, you know, smell what you might think of when you thought of that, that we would all have different smells.
Yeah.
But I've rooted it to the same emotion so that yeah. if I reference it again, or if I'm using it to describe a character, it sort of doesn't matter that the scents are different, because the emotional thing that I'm yeah. trying to get you to realize through using that sensory detail is the same.
I think that's the thing that we were all talking about, is that really when we get to these sensory details, so often it's about emotion. How is the mm-hmm. character feeling? We're describing sensory detail to give us a sense of what their experience is, not just in a physical way, but how that connects to the emotional truth of it, right? So, you know, in describing the way you're combining positive and negative imagery when it comes to the scent of something, that gives us a more well-rounded experience of, like, oh, this smells bad, but also a little nostalgic. And what does that mean that this character associates, you know, rotting meat with something a little nostalgic?
The mediums that we're using, we have to pay attention to these, because if you are writing and someone is going to read it, then you are using primarily the sense of vision to create a data stream mm-hmm. that is giving us. But if the audiobook is read, or if someone reads the book to you, you're listening to an audiobook, the information stream is now coming through your ears. And there are audiobooks that are not just read, they're dramatized. And so some of the sounds you might put in the text end up performed as sounds. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in a planetarium for a concert, and they said, if you see something you like, that's us. If you hear something you like, that's us. If you feel something you like, don't look at us. And then during the show, they were in the back with a squirt gun. And it was hilarious, because we were getting information through a stream that we told we wouldn't be getting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And anyway, I'm just fascinated by this.
The thing that I love about this is that we're in the module where we're talking about where and when, mm-hmm. but we're talking about character. And this is, I think, an important thing, is most of the time when your reader is experiencing the place, they are experiencing it through the lens of a character.
Yes.
When we're using these sensory details, how is the character experiencing it? And even if the character isn't there, the reader is interpreting it through their own lens of self and their own awareness of how their body would experience those things. Like, if I see someone who is describing stepping out into the humidity of a southern day, and they are describing, you know, the way I describe it, which is, it's like stepping into a sauna and being hit in the face with a hot, wet towel. I know that, and I bring my own memory to it. This is part of a thing that we talk about a lot, that your reader is building the story with you. Mm-hmm. And so invoking those sensory details, even if you're doing it in omniscient, even if you're doing it where there's not a character on the page, you are evoking them for the reader.
I mean, that's what I like so much about this topic is, you know, whether we like it or not, we all have bodies, mm-hmm. right? Whether we like it or not, we all have, you know, we're all in our Gundams made of ham, right? We're experiencing the world filtered through the sensory organs that we have. And so are your characters, right? So when you get this opportunity to remind your reader that your character has a body, they don't. They're fictional. You made them up. They literally don't have a body, but the reader does, mm-hmm. right? And so if you can connect those two dots, you will increase the verisimilitude of the reading experience exponentially.
And what I like about that in setting is that you can use things that are very visceral and sensory to connect things that are very speculative, very out there
yeah.
to something that we can feel. I was at an immersive theater show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival where we were in the dark, full black dark in front of like an arcade machine and you could like choose things and it was all audio. We're just standing there. But at one point there is like somebody is killed by some really weird out there gun of some sort. And the arcade machine squirted a tiny bit of water. It was the most disturbing thing ever because, like, yeah. I don't know what that machine does. I don't know what happened to the person exactly, but death plus liquid in your face is making you feel like so many things. And I connected really strongly. I don't remember much about that experience other than that moment because it was so visceral and because it was so sensory and I didn't need to know the specifics of how the thing works because I understood how the thing feels.
I mean, I think this is why I talk about genres of the body, right? Because, you know, horror is such a classic one because you can take the most outlandish thing in the world and you bring it down to blood and bone and the smell of somebody dying. And now it's so real for your reader, no matter how bonkers made up the monster was or the situation was or the haunting was. You make it felt in the body, and then your reader's with you in that moment.
I love the senses, and I love the idea that when you feel a thing, feel, smell, hear, see, that seems out of place, it can be absolutely horrifying. A little bit of wetness when there's been a splotchy, you know, death noise,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of open fresh air when you've opened a door that you expect to lead to another room and you realize that this door opens into don't take a step or you're going to fall to your death. You know, there's all kinds of ways to play with this where mm-hmm. the unexpected sense is part of a reveal that can be humorous or horrific or intellectually stimulating or whatever it is you want to evoke in the reader. You do it with more than one sense and it hits harder.
And it's a place where sometimes doing less can be more, right? You know, I think if you're really trying to overwhelm your audience with the sensory aspect, it can be hard to parse what's happening. You know, one of the, going back to horror, you know, I'm thinking about the famous rain room scene in Alien. Part of why that is one of the most iconic, effective scenes in all of horror history is because it's very quiet. He's there. You can hear the drips of water. You can feel how cool it is on his face. You're so grounded in his body in that moment of like this moment of relief of like, oh, there's water on my face. The chains are clinking. There's a little bit of a breeze. And this all those tiny little sensory mm-hmm. details that are making that scene pop. Right before awful things happen, right? And it's the quietness in that moment that lets you absorb the sensory reality of it, which then heightens your dread because you know what's coming.
I think along those lines, sometimes the thing that you can do is to leave space for the reader.
Yeah.
There's this this thing that has stuck with me for a long time from Stephen King, where he says you can describe the pain in great detail, going into, you know, all of the, you know, the nerve endings lighting up and all of this stuff. Or you can say they ripped his fingernail off. And like for our listeners, Dong Won sitting beside me just winced and turned away.
Yeah.
And so that's an example of leaving space for the reader, that sometimes mm-hmm. you describe the thing that has happened to someone and you don't deliver the sensory details. You let the reader experience them. It's something that you use sparingly, but it is also a thing that relies on the reader having a common experience.
I'm just thinking, it makes me think that part of the way that we experience sense is also distance, like how far away is the sound, how close is the smell, you know what I mean? And I think that there's like, that is something to think about and that actually I'd like to play with more, which is like what happens when a sense, something that you sensed as far away is suddenly closer. Or something that you sense as close, you know, if you're smelling, you know, your grandmother's baking bread, and then that becomes further away through time or further away through distance, like that actually conveys emotion in the exact same scent, but a different context for it.
Absolutely. I really love that. And that's combining the different lenses that we have in terms of context, in terms of time and distance and all these things, and how you experience that in your body. So While we think about how to make space for the audience, Mary Robinette, I believe you have some homework for us.
I do. This is an exercise that I learned from C.L. Polk. We're going to link in the liner notes to the original essay. And it is an exercise that they use to create an immediate sense of place that they got from an anxiety-stopping exercise. 5-4-3-2-1. You list 5 things your character can see, 4 things your character can hear, 3 things your character can touch, 2 things your character can smell, and 1 thing your character can taste. So that's your exercise, is to do the 5-4-3-2-1. I'm going to put in a slight twist for you, which is if your character's primary sense is something other than sight, make that the one that's the 5. This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.